It is Friday, December the 23rd. This is VOA's International Edition. So good to have you with us today. Coming up, Syria's army retaking the city of Aleppo for the first time in 4 years. Social media buzz on the Israeli-Palestinian situation, plus the U.S. president-elect and nuclear weapons.
On the surface of it, it does seem to run counter to the stated goals of every American leader since the end of the Cold War.
Also coming up today, holiday movies and the songs of the season. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The war-torn city of Aleppo in Syria has been recaptured. The Syrian army says it's made its biggest victory in nearly the 6 years of civil war for the Syrian government. President Bashar al-Assad's government has full control now of Aleppo for the first time since 2012. Rebel forces agreed to withdraw from the city after a month-long army offensive drove them from 90% of their original territory. Meantime, the UN Special Envoy for Syria says the end of fighting in Aleppo is not the end of the problems there. Speaking in Geneva, Staffan de Mistura said it was crucial now to look at the situation of the evacuees and how to help them through the winter. He said most of them who have fled the former rebel enclaves of Aleppo have moved only a few kilometers away to Idlib, which could turn into another Aleppo.
The next steps, of course, is to look at where do the people who are being evacuated go and whether they, in the winter, will be actually not suffering further. Because some of them have went to West Aleppo, few. Many have gone to the rural part of Aleppo, which is in the armed-controlled areas, in the armed opposition. And therefore, again, a question about how to make sure that the humanitarian aid from the UN can reach them. And many have gone to Idlib, which could be, in theory, the next Aleppo. So we have to look forward. And what is the reply to that? Two. The first one is, make sure that the UN has not only access, and we will hear to that, but also the means, the capacity, the funding for the winter. We are in the winter. It's snowing in Aleppo. And very cold in the whole area. So that there will be enough funds and capacity for the UN to reach these people while the priority remains cessation of hostilities.
UN Special Advisor John Eglin says the United Nations has requested access to all eastern Aleppo in order to deliver humanitarian aid and to help protect those left there through the frigid weather. However, he said UN efforts are being hindered by Syrian government bureaucracy.
We would also have liked to be part of, we will also want to be part of all our negotiations that take place that have humanitarian implications. We would have wanted to be part of the agreement that we had influence on so that we could have been there from the beginning, and that also goes for ICRC and the others. But all in all, this was an operation, the largest that I know of, that took place, and I think it saved a lot of lives. And I think it is it means that the end of the battle proved to be less cruel than it could have been.
De Mistura said new negotiations on a political situation to the Syrian situation could resume in Geneva on February the 8th.
The reason for doing it on the 8th of February are many, and some of them are obviously linked on the fact that we will have also a new Secretary General by then firmly in hand and therefore be able to launch his own initiative. B, there are some important initiatives that are being planned in January, including what we heard about the Astana meeting. We feel that all those initiatives are useful to us in order to be able then to have a common approach, which is the only one under 2254, the UN one.
The withdrawal of rebels from Aleppo as part of the Russia-Turkey deal will bring the country's largest city under Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's control and mark his biggest victory in more than 5 years. Also in the news, Egypt has asked the United Nations to indefinitely postpone a vote on a resolution demanding an end to Israeli settlement construction in the Palestinian territories. The resolution also says the existing settlements have no legal validity and that are a flagrant violation of international law. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had urged the Obama administration to veto the U.N. resolution that would have halted the building of settlements in the occupied Palestinian territory. Now let's look at the social media buzz about all of this, the Israeli-Palestinian situation specifically. International Edition's Michael Lippin is here. Hey, Michael, why is this getting so much attention?
Hi, Steve. It's because Thursday was the day that the UN Security Council had scheduled a vote on a draft resolution that would have demanded that Israel completely stop settlement activity on occupied territory in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, both areas claimed by the Palestinians for a future state. Egypt had worked with the Palestinians to draft the text, but it suddenly withdrew the draft and postponed a vote on it indefinitely. Ahead of the expected vote, Israel's prime minister took to Facebook and Twitter to implore President Barack Obama to veto the resolution, saying it would undermine chances for peace. That made Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu one of the top Facebook trends today. The Reuters news agency quotes Western officials as saying Obama had intended to abstain on the draft and effectively allow the Security Council to approve it, an abstention that would have been a departure from previous U.S. vetoes of resolutions that American administrations have seen as biased against Israel, a longtime U.S. ally. Now, there's no official word from the Obama administration about what it would have done, and news reports have said that Egypt delayed the vote after Israel also appealed to Cairo not to go ahead with it. Even President-elect Donald Trump got involved, tweeting that he believes the draft should have been vetoed and posting a message on Facebook calling it extremely unfair to all Israelis.
Michael, how were Facebook users reacting to this?
Well, there definitely were two camps, as there usually are when it comes to Israeli-Palestinian issues. I saw a lively debate on Iranian state TV network Press TV's Facebook page. Facebook user Russell Burt wrote, "I support the halt to Israeli settlement activities. Netanyahu is nothing more than a bully and a thief." On the other side, user SheStev Chikutsa Piri said, "Let the resolution be vetoed. To veto the resolution is not support for Israel, but it is the way of truth."
And what else out there was trending today, Michael?
Well, it's Trump's eldest daughter, Ivanka Trump. She became a top Twitter world trend because of an incident on Thursday when she, her husband Jared Kushner, and their three children had just boarded a plane in New York for a flight to San Francisco. Reports say a man sitting nearby and who doesn't like her father started verbally berating Ivanka and eventually was removed from the flight. The man's husband posted a tweet, which was later deleted, saying, "My husband is chasing down Ivanka and Jared to harass them." Another passenger who witnessed the incident, Mark Sheff, posted a long note on Facebook disputing some reports that the man removed from the flight had been yelling, saying he was just agitated. He also praised Ivanka, saying she handled the situation calmly and with class. Steve?
And many thanks to you, Michael. International Edition's Michael Lippin. By the way, you can follow Michael on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Turning now to U.S. politics, the Trump team, that's President-elect Trump, is trying to clarify what could have been an alarming statement from the President-elect on bolstering the United States' nuclear capabilities. He tweeted, and I quote, "The United States must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capabilities until such a time as the world comes to its senses regarding nukes," unquote. Mr. Trump gave no context or details of what he meant, but Trump transition spokesman Jason Miller said the president-elect was talking about the need to keep nuclear weapons away from terrorists and dangerous world leaders. International Edition's Lori London speaks with Cameron Munter, a former U.S. ambassador, currently the chief executive of the East-West Institute.
On the surface of it, it does seem to run counter to the stated goals of every American leader since the end of the Cold War, to say that while we don't abandon traditional nuclear doctrine, that is, we're not getting rid yet of nuclear forces, that the goal and the method is to have as few nuclear weapons, especially strategic nuclear weapons, as possible. So on the surface of it, it would sound that that's counter to that. That said, American military and political leaders also have called for the upgrading and replacement of old nukes. That is to say, in the argument has always been that they are safer, that, you know, older nuclear weapons, you know, it's safer to have new ones that are more modern and better made, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not that there has been simply disarmament. That has not been, I think, the position of any government. But what this tweet would imply to me is a departure from the overarching verity that we want to have fewer nuclear weapons. Barack Obama, you know, in his Prague speech at the beginning of his administration, said that he envisioned a world without nuclear weapons. And that's been a theme, I think, that many have had for many years.
The Donald Trump tweet came hours after Russian President Vladimir Putin pledged to enhance his country's nuclear forces. So I think there are some people raising concern that we could be looking at another potential arms race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, you don't know how much statements, whether these statements will actually lead to actual policies. But it's something I think a lot of people are justifiably are concerned about. And I think we have to watch closely, especially after Mr. Trump is inaugurated, what kind of policies he puts forth in the nuclear area, whether or not the dialogue that he purports to want with Russia helps allay the kind of fears that this kind of exchange seems to have raised.
And lastly, would you think that more nuclear weapons or another potential nuclear arms race would make the world less safe?
No. I mean, basically, it's been kind of the common sense of, I think, the international experts around the world that fewer nuclear weapons is better. And that's been the idea that this has been possible since the end of the Cold War by the attempts to understand one another and to try to lessen mistrust. And in as much as you can lessen mistrust, talk with each other more, the idea that you need fewer nuclear weapons is seen to be a good thing. I think that what I would hope everyone does in response to these statements is take a deep breath and say, look, this requires dialogue. This requires people of goodwill and common sense to talk with each other. And if there's a way that the new president can do that with the Russians, if the Russians are open to that and if the president is open to that, I think that's clearly what needs to happen.
That is former U.S. Ambassador Cameron Munter. He is now chief executive of the East-West Institute. He was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. Well, a manhunt is continuing across Europe for Tunisian-born Anis Amri in connection with this week's deadly truck attack on a Christmas market in Berlin.
We can Ihnen heute mitteilen, dass es zusätzliche Hinweise gibt, dass dieser Tatverdächtige.
Germany's Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière has confirmed Amri's fingerprints have been found in the vehicle's cab. Meantime, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said she is confident that the German people can overcome the threat of terrorism. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat. Thousands of used coats are collected, packed, labeled, and moved to charitable organizations around New York City. It's a festive time of year, but for thousands of people, many homeless, staying warm is hard, especially without a coat.
We have had an enormous amount of clients coming daily asking for coats.
Wando Cruz is the program director for the Coalition's Grand Central Food Program, one of the organizations giving winter coats out to anyone who needs one at a time when the number of homelessness is at a record high, he says. At New York Cares, another volunteer group, they've collected 20,000 coats, including one from New York resident Glenn Archer.
I know I see a lot of homeless people when I'm down in the city, and you know, I know what it's like to be down on your luck, so hopefully it'll go to a good cause, you know.
New York shelters hold some 60,000 people at any one time. Still, there could be thousands of homeless people during the holidays out on the streets without a coat. From VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Well, this holiday season has a lot of offerings for moviegoers who may feel like celebrating with films chock full of special effects, nods to Hollywood classics, of course, A-list actors, thrills, action, and naturally some romance. Well, some of these films also will dominate the awards season when that comes along in the new year. For some reasons of clarity now, we should note that this list only includes some of what's in theaters right now and represents mainly those bigger, bolder, glitzier productions. We'll reserve the time for the higher-brow, more award-worthy films for another time. Here's VOA's Penelope Pulu.
You're fired.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, I see the decorations. Good luck in the new year.
I just heard you play, and I wanted...
Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling sweep us off our feet with their romantic musical La La Land, about two struggling artists in Los Angeles trying to follow their dreams while they fall passionately in love with each other.
City of stars, there's so much that I can't see.
The bittersweet story is accentuated by haunting musical score and infectious yet beat choreography. The on-screen chemistry between the two stars is reminiscent of old Hollywood couples such as Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. This film is not only joyful, moving, and inspiring, it is a sure winner at the awards season and a must for the holidays.
A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know how to destroy it.
For those who love Star Wars and are especially attached to the original trilogy, Rogue One could satisfy. The battles, the starships, the rebels fighting a desperate war against the Empire while the Death Star looms over them, going back to the 70s, but in IMAX 3D with even bigger and better special effects. Only The Grinch would offer spoilers, but we can certainly assure you that you will enjoy it till the surprises at the very end. Felicity Jones stars as another strong female character in the Star Wars franchise, and she is surrounded by a decent cast.
We've traced his bloodline back 500 years.
Assassin's Creed is based on the popular video game and combines great martial arts scenes with the storyline of Callum Lynch, who unlocks his genetic memories through a revolutionary technology and experiences the adventures of his ancestor, Aguilar, in 15th century Spain.
Welcome to the Spanish Inquisition.
This high-action film is the perfect hybrid video game slash movie, which will attract the gaming community as well as fans of the film's high-caliber stars, Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard. Those sci-fi lovers who crave an intelligent plot and a character-driven psychological drama will definitely enjoy Arrival, a tense story of extraterrestrial contact with mystical implications. Amy Adams has already garnered awards and nominations for her interpretation as the linguist trying to establish a language with the aliens.
Now that's a proper introduction.
We boarded the Avalon with a destination.
In Passengers, another sci-fi flick, Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt are on a journey to a distant colony planet. but a machine malfunction in their sleep chambers wakes them 90 years early. Soon they discover that it may not have been an accident, as the ship that is transporting thousands of souls is spiraling towards a star. This high-budget film has special effects, popular actors, and mystery, so it promises to do well at the box office. Whether it will garner praise remains to be seen, but it will surely put moviegoers who want to see collapsing stars, cool space, ship gadgets, and romance in a festive mood. Happy holidays. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning.
On Christmas Day in the morning.
And what was in those ships, all three, on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day? And what was in those ships, all three, on Christmas Day in the morning?
On Christmas Day in the morning.
The Virgin Mary and Christ were there on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. The Virgin Mary and Christ were there on Christmas Day in the morning.
You know, it might be fair to say that no singer is more associated with holiday music than Nat King Cole, who came on the scene as a jazz pianist in the 1930s and later shot to prominence in 1956 as the first African-American entertainer to headline a regular television series.
On Christmas Day in the morning, on Christmas Day in the morning.
Born Nathaniel Adams Coles in 1919, Nat King Cole began singing holiday songs early in his career and sold huge numbers of albums with many of the Christmas classics, such as O Holy Night.
O Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of the dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angel voices, oh, now. Christ was born. Oh, night divine, oh, night divine.
Beginning in the late 1940s, Cole began recording and performing pop music for mainstream audiences, in which he was often accompanied by a string orchestra. His place as a popular star was highlighted during this period by such enduring hits as The Christmas Song.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows
Yeah, Nat King Cole. Pretty nice, huh? Listen, thanks everyone for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. Latest world news is straight ahead. Hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Daryl Smith, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Friday. Now, a bit more from Nat King Cole.
Tonight, they know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Under its Rewards for Justice program, the U.S. State Department has announced it is increasing to $25 million its reward offer for information leading to the location, arrest, or conviction of ISIL leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, also known as Ibrahim Awad Ibrahim Ali al-Badri and Abu Dua. Al-Baghdadi is the senior leader of the terrorist organization, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, also known as ISIL or Daesh. Protecting the homeland and the American people is the top counterterrorism priority for the United States. Just as military efforts have been intensified against ISIL, the United States is increasing the means available to gain information on ISIL leadership and bring them to justice. In June 2014, ISIL seized control of portions of Syria and Iraq, self-declared a so-called Islamic caliphate, and named al-Baghdadi as caliph. In recent years, ISIL has gained the allegiance of jihadist groups and radicalized individuals around the world, and has inspired terrorist attacks in the United States. Under al-Baghdadi, ISIL has been responsible for the deaths of thousands of civilians in the Middle East, including the brutal murder of numerous civilian hostages from Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States. The group also has enabled or directed terrorist attacks beyond the borders of its self-declared caliphate. In 2011, the United States named Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi a specially designated global terrorist under Executive Order 13224. He was also sanctioned by the United Nations Security Council, ISIL Al-Qaeda Sanctions Committee. At that time, al-Baghdadi was the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, which ultimately morphed into ISIL. If you have information on Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, contact the Rewards for Justice Office via email at no2daesh@rewards4justice.co, by phone at 1-800-877-3927, or by mail at Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. You can follow the Rewards for Justice program on Twitter at twitter.com/rewards4justice.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government. It's 4